Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have an author with me who is a huge Springsteen fan, loves the Jersey Shore, enjoys whiskey rye Manhattans, is inspired to write by music, is a senior executive of a 100-year-old financial institution in Philadelphia, and who has a sizable bucket list that includes skiing the bowl at the Highlands in Aspen, Colorado, and camping like Ernest Hemingway in this country's western states. Who is this person? He is C.A. McGroarty. Chad was born and raised in southern New Jersey, and he still calls it home. Having moved away after college, Chad spent time living in Chicago and Pittsburgh before moving back to Philadelphia and meeting his wife, Nicole. And now they live in Haddonfield, New Jersey with their two sons and black lab, Wrigley. He writes about struggle, redemption, second chance, faith, forgiveness. And I just know we are going to have a fascinating time, so let's get started. Welcome to the network, Chad.
Hi, how are you?
I am good, and I was looking forward to today. I was very intrigued by you and your website and your books, so I'm excited to share you with our listeners. And a Springsteen fan, you can't beat that.
It's not hard to be a Springsteen fan when you're born and raised in New Jersey. So
I bet. I know.
It didn't hurt.
Well, music seems to be important to you. In fact, you say that you try to write a song every year.
Yeah, I'm not musically inclined. When I look at some of the artists that I listen to that inspire me to write, it's probably not a coincidence that they're all solo artists. And I think a lot of the great songwriters, they could have been authors. Mm-hmm. I try to pen a song once a year. I can tell you I have a backlog, so I'm going to continue to focus on the novel writing, but with Fantastic in particular, I thought the story kind of lent itself to a song. Mm-hmm. And long after I wrote it, it was kind of easy for me just to sit down and put some verses together, so I did it. I guess you can't technically call it a song because no one's played it. So, but maybe someday.
Oh, no, I think it's a song. If you hear it in your head, it is a song. And I agree with you that, yeah, a songwriter is very much like an author. They're telling a story, so.
Yeah, I look at people that are that talented that they can, you know, write a song and put music to it and play piano and guitar and build all those things into it. And the really good ones, absolutely, to your point, they are telling a story. Mm-hmm. And the melody is part of it.
Yep, absolutely. That's very true. Well, we could talk about this all day, I think, but I want to get into your books. Now, Chad, you say that your characters know what it's like to fight for something they believe in. They long for a second chance. They seek redemption and want forgiveness, all the while living between the edge of reason and failure, mm-hmm. sanity and madness. Before we get into each of your books, why are these important to you as you create your characters?
There's two words that are just very much a big part of my fabric. And their hope and redemption. You know, hope is something that has always had a significant meaning for me, and its simplest meaning. It's always meant a lot to me. So it builds a story. You know, there's something very appealing to me about a character that is seeking redemption. You know, has forgiveness, has done something in their past that they regret, and they get a second chance. They get a second chance to redeem themselves, a second chance at life, and a second chance to right a particular wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think that that's something that appeals, and I think a lot of people can connect with that. You know, I think hope is something every person can cling to, no matter what it is they're striving for. You see people that have all the things in life, that one could want or seemingly want, but yet there's still something missing. And, you know, I think that's hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever that is, whatever that thing that's missing, they can hope for it. And potentially that little slice of hope is the thing that gets them out of bed in the morning. So mm-hmm. I think as an author, you know, hope and redemption are two major themes for me, because it just, I think a lot of people can connect with it.
Yes, yes. I got that from the very instant I met your website, and I read what I just read, that people long for a second chance and seek redemption and want forgiveness. And I think every human being does. Now, we don't have to have murdered somebody, but we've all done things in life that we regret and we would ask forgiveness for. So I think you are hitting on a universal feeling or a touch point for absolutely everyone. So yeah. And so this now permeates all of your books. So let's get into your book, Fantastic. I want to start with that one, because that originally was a screenplay that you wrote while living in Chicago. And I understand that your father played a big part in the writing of your characters. So that became your first novel. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of that situation.
So Fantastic, correct. It was originally a screenplay that I started writing at this point almost 20 years ago. You know, the seeds of that novel were born out of a cast of characters that my father had introduced me to at a very young age. You know, redemption is a big part of that book. Charlie Boone and Jake Mott are the two main characters. And Charlie Boone is a city bus driver on the brink of insanity. Charlie Boone is an ex-convict who... was just released from death row. By fate, these two individuals meet, and their lives cross, and they end up taking a cross-country trip. And the story is about that trip and about their relationship and about why they met. And certainly the ending helps piece all that together for the reader.
So this was kind of a personal book for you, in that it did pull characters from, not exact characters, but the feeling of people that your dad, I guess, used to invite to your home, kind of sometimes some unsavory kind of folks, mm-hmm. to show you the other side of life.
Yeah, that's accurate. So my father was a trial attorney in New Jersey, and in Camden, New Jersey, no less. And, you know, over the years, he would befriend some of these characters, you know, less than savory, to your point. And he would. He'd befriend them. Sometimes, you know, obviously he was defending them. And he would. He would invite them into our home. They would sit at our dinner table. I often look back on it sometimes. And I think to myself, I don't know how my mother did it. it was just something they trusted. You know, my father trusted these some of these individuals. They certainly trusted him, and it did. It opened up I had two sisters and a brother as well, and it opened up our eyes mm-hmm. to another part of life that wasn't too far away from where we grew up, just mm-hmm. about a 10-15 minute ride to Camden, New Jersey. So it did. Those experiences, it did teach me a little bit about redemption and someone's longing for a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my dad tried to do
yep.
for these people.
Yep, sounds like a good man, and you learned from him.
He was. He, you know, I think part of that hope, too, is probably something that has a little bit to do with just how I was raised. And, you know, just having parents who always taught us to live unselfishly and to help people less fortunate than yourself.
Yes, and I know this speaks to you because, well, obviously your dad was giving these people some hope. I mean, he did not have to like them or talk to them at all outside of his job. So I'm sure just that relationship gave them hope. And I read a blog post of yours. I don't know what exactly when you wrote it, but it was like reach out and touch somebody and smile at a stranger. And just those tiny little things that we could do every day may give someone hope. We have no idea what they might be going through. So I could tell that this
has permeated you. Yeah. You know, we need, as human beings, human interaction. It's the lifeblood of just functioning. I firmly believe that. And, you know, reaching out and touching someone in a positive way, mm-hmm. no doubt in my mind, can have a positive effect for that individual as they go through the course of their day.
Yes.
And it can be contagious. And it can be something that starts a chain reaction.
Absolutely. And I think it's something very important to teach our young children as well, with all the bullying and the kind of things that go on in school these days. Just one kind word toward another little child from another child could really have a lifelong effect.
Yeah. And you know, to that extent as well, you know, when you look at today's younger generation, so much of it is becoming non-human contact.
Yes.
And texting is a huge part of how these young kids communicate.
Mm-hmm.
I see it, you know, everyone sees it, I think, with young people. And they could be maybe two rooms away from each other, but yet they might still be texting.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah, more than ever, there's an opportunity here for all parents, teachers, you know, anyone to help guide young people to you know, the best way to communicate and the best way to interact and engage,
mm-hmm.
you know, just engaging with people.
Right, right. Oh, I knew you and I would have so much to talk about today. Just felt that we could talk about this for a long time, but I want to get to your second novel, Back to the Start. Tell us about that.
So Back to the Start was born out of, you know, we talked about music, and music's a big inspiration for me, which we already talked about, but Back to the Start was born out of a song that I heard, a song by Coldplay, called The Scientist. It's about three strangers. Takes place on one particular day. It's actually the day before Thanksgiving. By the way, all of my my novels take place in Philadelphia.
Okay.
So I do like to write locally and have somewhat of a local flavor, at least for the start of the novel. Fantastic. Begins in Philadelphia and moves itself west and ends in California. But Back to the Start does take place in one day down in downtown Center City. And it's about three strangers. And each one is struggling in their current situation. And it's a story about how they meet and how they interact and their interactions with one another and the positive things that come out of it.
All right. And you will leave us with that. So kind of a cliffhanger there. Folks can check out that book. It's called Back to the Start. And another book, A Return to Normalcy. It's the first short in a series, correct?
Yeah, Return to Normalcy is an old short story that I wrote a long, long time ago, and I will say I haven't added to the short story series, and as I've kind of progressed as a writer, it's a great story. It's a short, quick read. It has an element of kind of dark intrigue to it for sure, but I also don't see myself picking back up with that series.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite tying into the my themes of hope and redemption, which have become much more a bigger part of what I like to write.
Right. No, I get that. It sounds like you're kind of on a train of thought here, and if that doesn't fit in, we'll just put it to the side for a while.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to say that I wouldn't go back to it.
Yeah, it's just not time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of what I write is a seed. I feel like that. It's always kind of born out of, you know, again, we talk about songs. Like, I'll sometimes hear a verse of a particular song, and now I'll cling to it. Like, it'll just, it becomes really a part of me, and it kind of, I'll replay that, and there's something there, and there's something brewing there, and then all of a sudden that seed kind of starts to take shape. I start writing these characters and start thinking about them, and hope and redemption are such a big part of that.
You know, just kind of tracing that back, think of how important this is. Somebody else wrote a lyric and they wrote a song, which obviously meant something to them. And then you seemingly randomly hear it and it becomes important to you. And then it becomes the seed for you to write. And somebody reads your book and it becomes a seed for them. It's just interesting to watch, kind of watch how that message travels.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, there was a time when I would always be listening to music as I wrote. I mean, I would do it religiously. I don't do that anymore. You know, it might be playing in the background, which is fine, but it's not a focus. Certainly not an intentional exercise anymore like it used to be. But yeah, it does still inspire me. You know, I'll hear a song, like I said, or a verse, and something gets born out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just hearing those words, and it's funny. Needless to say, I've been known to kill a song in our house. You can just ask my wife.
Please stop playing it.
Yes, it would just. And then, but it is to your point, earlier point. Then you know, she starts hearing it, and then we definitely probably had. Well, not definitely. I know we have different tastes in music, but after 15 years of marriage or close there too, I think I finally converted her. After all the songs she's been hearing in the house.
Oh my gosh, that makes me laugh because I painted an entire huge room once listening to Edie Brickell, just that I'm not aware of too many things. I know what I know, if you know what I mean. And that just played all, you know, for 3 or 4 days. Everybody thought I was nuts, but it got me to paint the room. Well, anyway, you clearly write to inspire and give hope. And you've even trademarked a logo, a hope logo. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that was something that when I was finishing up Back to the Start, I thought of doing. And I thought, just, you know, moving forward, it was something that I wanted to be a part of my name, and certainly a part of all the novels that I write moving forward. So, I guess, you know, to some extent, a form of branding, so that when, you know, people think of my name, they think of hope and second chance and things like that.
Yeah.
I just came up with it. Just on the fly, you know, just kind of doing some sketches in my office, and I thought the clasped two, the arms with clasped hands, kind of fit in well with the word itself and its meaning, and you know, had something to do with that holding of a heart. Yeah, so I trademarked it, and who knows? You might start seeing it on coffee mugs or something. I don't know yet.
There you go. And you know what? The spacing between the letters was interesting, too.
Yeah. And all the letters kind of have a different, almost like a different text to them.
Mm-hmm.
One's almost cursive. You know, the other one's a symbol. You know, the E is just three straight lines. So I can't tell you that when I look at those four letters, well, it could mean a lot of different things, but I think it means a little bit of diversification, you know, how much we're all so different as individuals, as human beings, and our colors are different, and our backgrounds are different, and our personalities are different, and I think that was part of what I was going for with different texts.
Right. Well, I like it. If your first T-shirt comes out, let me know. I will purchase one.
You got it.
Now, you say, I write stories about complicated characters with flawed backgrounds, people who have failed or made grave mistakes, yet find the fortitude to get up every day, face their plight, and make something of what is left. And I think that's just so important for every single person on the planet. So let's talk about your characters for a minute. As you begin to write your characters, do you have any kind of a questionnaire to help you, or do they just start to grow organically? Give us a little peek into your process.
Yeah, they definitely grow organically. I don't have a process where I even start out with an outline. I really do take these characters with me, and they become I feel like they, you know, it can be heavy at times. They become a part of me, and I feel them inside of me, and it gets to the point where I now have to tell their story. because their story becomes important to me, you know. But what I will do is I will start to see it. I'm very visionary, you know. I see things, and you know, I can be at a red light and see some things that is stopping at a red light, and that triggers something inside of me, an emotion, or that, you know, brings that character to the forefront of my mind. And so I do start to see their path. I always know where I'm headed in the story. I'm not sure if I answered your original question.
I'm getting that you're not the person who fills out a questionnaire and says, okay, this person would do this and do that, and you just let them be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Very free to that extent. Mm-hmm. And I also think that lends itself to a degree of reality.
Yes.
You know, I try to write about characters that people can relate to. You know, Jake Mott was a convicted murderer who sat on death row for 30 years. But at his core, he made a mistake. But at his core, he was a good man. He was a good person. And it took meeting Charlie Boone, the city bus driver, for Jake to even realize that himself. As they drive across country and they forge a relationship that starts out very caustic. You know, a lot of what I write about, too, which we didn't really plug into yet, I absolutely believe in that metaphysical world out there that, you know, you can't see or touch, mm-hmm. but it's there, you know, and I do believe in fate. Charlie Boone and Jake Mott, they could have never done anything different but not have met. Mm-hmm. You know, they were going to meet no matter what. And, so Jake Mott is a convicted felon on death row, but he's not much different than probably 50, 60, 70% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
He made a mistake, you know, and he certainly regretted it. So, you know, I think that's a big part for me. You know, I want to write about characters that people can relate to that are, and a lot of my stories, or all my stories are, you know, it's fiction, but I like to think it's grounded fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that could take place in anyone's life tomorrow.
Yes. I just feel the intensity of you as we're speaking. I'm wondering, so as you're writing, when you get done writing for the day or the evening, are you energized or are you exhausted? Or is that one and the same?
You know, I really get a lot of I get a lot of satisfaction out of the process. When I'm not writing, I start to feel that in a negative way. You know, it's not like it's the burden or this taxing feeling that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm so behind on this next novel. It's more just, it's really become a part of me and what I do and what I love. So if I'm busy or I can't get to it, a couple weeks go by and I don't write anything, I feel like my personality needs that. You know, mm-hmm. I'm definitely happier when I'm writing and churning out a few pages a day.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. It's a very emotional and a spiritual release. I'm sure we can kind of liken it to a runner who gets that positive feeling or almost that high when they run and after they run. And if you go a couple of days without doing that, you feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and along those same lines, there is no better feeling for me when I'm writing and I'll finish writing a paragraph or maybe a couple paragraphs, and I'll just sit back and be like, oh, wow. Like, that felt great. And like when I feel the emotion myself or the mood that I'm trying to project, you know, or list it out of a reader, when I feel that as I'm reading it, I know that I've got something really good.
Yes. Yep. So as you're writing, your books, what have you learned about yourself?
Wow, that's a good question. I'm probably not much different than, you know, a lot of the characters I write about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always striving to be better and to get better. And, sometimes that can, sometimes that can be burdensome, and you can't let it consume you. But, I think as I grow older and I write these novels about these characters, there's a little bit of similarities between hope and faith, and I think my faith probably continues to grow as I get older and continue to write.
No, I get that. Writing is a gift to others, obviously, but it's also a teaching tool for ourselves, the writer, if we choose to pay attention, which I think most writers actually do. So what's next for you, Chad? What are you working on now?
I'm working on a novel titled Chasing Atlantic, and it's about a retired Philadelphia police detective who tragically loses his daughter, an only child, to in a bad car accident. But the reader meets him 10 years after the fact. It's a story about that event, which acted as a springboard. Basically, he fell into, a state of depression and, for all intents and purposes, basically seclusion, isolation for about 10 years. So it's a story about his reawakening out of that. And part of that reawakening is born out of a cold case that was never solved before he left the force, or actually before he was forced into retirement because of some of his actions. And the reader meets him, and they kind of go on his adventure of finally coming to grips with the loss of his daughter and implementing himself, or rather, plugging himself back into society. At the same time, while trying to solve this case that is 15 years old and is a cold case now. So it kind of runs between those two parallel themes, two parallel stories.
Quite a premise. And what was the title of that?
It's called Chasing Atlantic.
Okay. And when do you think that will be out?
Right now, the hope is summer 2018.
Okay. Gives us something to look forward to from you. Well, we have surely danced about today, and I have so enjoyed it, but I want to make sure that we haven't missed anything that you wanted to talk about.
No, I think we covered a lot of ground. I've really enjoyed it, and I will be at, for any local listeners in the Delaware Valley area, I will be at the Collingswood Book Festival on Saturday, October 8th.
All right, that's good to know. Saturday, October 8th. So now where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
So they can go to camigrardi.com. Again, that's camigrardi.com, MCGRoarty. They can follow me on Twitter, at camigrardi is the handle. Anyone who would like to go to my website and sign up and register at my website, I will send them a short story, never before published, and they can keep in touch with me about my Chasing Atlantic and seeing some of those unreleased chapters before they go to print. They can buy at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Fantastic can be bought at Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. And Back to the Start right now, just Amazon.
Okay. All right, so a good place to start will be your website, C.A. McGrory. Again, that's spelled MCGRoarty, CAMcGrory.com. Well, before we head out, any final words that you would like to leave with us?
Yeah, reach out and touch someone, as mentioned earlier.
Excellent. You are very inspiring, and I love your message of hope and faith and redemption, and I just knew that today was going to be a good time with you. I wish we could spend a couple more hours, because I just find our conversation fascinating. Maybe we'll have to do this again when your book comes out next summer. It's Chad McGrory, camcGrory.com. Chad, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing you with us today.
Pat, I absolutely enjoyed every moment of it and would love to come back.